Hey, this is Tracy Lawrence, and welcome to our new podcast. We're going to spend some time talking with all of my artist friends and really getting to some things and digging deeper into conversations that we weren't actually able to do on Honky Tonk on the radio show. So I hope you enjoy it. Sit back and listen to the conversation.
Yeah, so we're going to start with what I'm pretty sure, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is one of Tracy's favorite interviews.
Yeah, Kenny Rogers, of all the ones that we've done over the last several years, was by far one of my favorites. There was a few of them that are in my top five, so we'll probably start with those. But Kenny was awesome.
Well, I know Kenny's one of your favorite because when we have other artists in over the years since then, you always go, oh man, we had Kenny Rogers in here.
You know, but Kenny.
And you tell stories about him being in here.
Think about Kenny. Kenny's such an icon, and just the diversity of his career, just the Westerns and things that he's done, and the life that he's lived, and the relationships that he's had, and the music that he's made. He's just a wonderful storyteller and just a sweet and gracious man.
Yeah, and he told us some fantastic stories. So here we go.
I'd like to welcome my special guest, Mr. Kenny Rogers, to the show.
I'm here, and I appreciate it. Congratulations on your show.
Thank you very much.
It's very exciting.
Started the show in January, and it's been a lot of fun. You know, I did radio in college, so this was kind of coming back to what my old roots were many, many years ago. But it's been a bit of an adjustment. You know, you spend 25 years on the other side of the microphone, and it gets a little difficult.
College did pay for itself.
Well, yeah, thank goodness for a music scholarship where I got to sing in the choral ensemble. I wore the powder blue tuxedo on the weekends, and
like
smoke gets in your eye.
I'd like to have pictures of that.
Yeah. It's good to see you.
You too.
I think the last time that I saw you, you played the skirmer horn about two or 3 years ago, and my wife and I came and got to visit with you backstage. And I have to tell you, I was so blown away. It was just great to see the way your show's put together through the many dynamics of your career all the way back to your rock and roll days. It was really great to see.
Yeah, you know, actually, my first 10 years in the music business, I was with a jazz group.
Really?
I used to play upright bass and sing jazz.
Wow.
And Tony Bennett used to come in and sing with us, and all the people who were visiting Houston used to come in. And that's where I think I developed whatever musical. Our keyboard player was his group. And he asked me, I played guitar, and he said, I'd like for you to play bass with my group, with a new group. And I said, Bobby, I don't play bass. He said, I'm going to give you a secret. There's more demand for bad bass players than bad guitar players. So I said, okay, I'll learn to play bass. And he taught me how to play bass.
Wow.
And it was really one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had. He was blind, and he was a great musician. And we had did some very intricate jazz parts, and I thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it.
Wow. And how long ago was that? What year was that?
1957 to 67. And then I joined the New Christy Minstrels. I was with them for a year. And I learned something. You know, each place you go musically, you learn something.
I think so. You know, and a lot of times, even as band members change, you notice that there's a different dynamic that's been brought in. Somebody has a little bit different idea of an accent. So, you know, different people that you're around influence everything that happens in the overall dynamic.
Yeah, and with the Christies, I learned the value of a story song that had social significance. They were doing Green Green, and they were talking about, you know, changing the world.
Is that what, as you got into the 80s with the Gambler and all those things, was
Coward
that
where County,
that initial love for that
Coward type of the song? County was about a rape. Reuben James was about a black man who raised a white child. Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town, about a Vietnam War vet who came home. And, you know, they all had social statements to make. That's what I thought country music was about, was telling about people and their problems.
It seems like country music's lost a little bit of that in this day and age.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's very healthy. Even when I came in, I think I took it to a different place, and not intentionally. But, you know, and I think there's a lot of people who didn't like country music in New Jersey and in New York. I mean, and I think that I did things they could like. And the thing is, once you get into country music, you don't leave. It's a very, very tight community.
It really is.
And once you start listening to it, where are you going to go that's going to give you the same honesty and the same stories? And today, the great thing is the new generation is bringing a lot of kids into country music.
I agree. They're bringing a whole new generation into
country. And they're going to be around forever.
They are. But I still think the individuality of the singers from your generation, there was so much personality, so much diversity. I mean, everything from the style of music that you did to George Strait or Randy Travis Moore on the traditional side. You know, even Glenn Campbell.
And, you know, I miss that.
I do too.
You know, Glenn Campbell, as we all know, is having some problems. And they played his show on television. And I had forgotten some of the songs and how well he sang. You know, he played guitar on Just Dropped In to See What Condition.
Did he really? I never knew that.
He was with a group out there. They were the well-known rhythm section.
Do you know, I never heard of that song until The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, that's where I think a lot of kids heard it.
That's where a lot of us were exposed to the earlier part of your career.
They said that's the only time they've ever, or the first time, they ever used a song from the first note to the last note without interrupting.
Do you know, and I may have told you this when we visited about 3 years ago, you were responsible for my very first paying gig when I was a child. My grandmother's sister, Lucille, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, was trying to get me to sing Lucille, and I held off and held off till she paid me a dollar.
My mom's name was Lucille, and she kept saying, "Son, you can't do that. You talk about four hungry children." And I said, "Mom, it's not about you. You can let it go now."
Wow.
And she was really upset. She thought I was talking about her. I said, "First of all, I didn't write it. Secondly, it's not about you."
In a bar in Toledo.
How much are you working now?
About 100 days a year.
You really? You still enjoy it?
Yeah. It's not as easy. My mobility is not good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've learned to make jokes about it. And I learned a long time ago, if you're doing something on stage that's noticeable, if you don't tell the audience, they make up their own reason. He's drinking. He's doing this. He's doing that. If you tell them, they don't care. So I have just some funny. I just tell them, look, I had a knee replaced, and I think they replaced the wrong damn knee. And I said, now, I'm telling you this because if I should fall, you in the front row, don't feel like you have to come help me. I have life alert. You know, and then they know if I walk around.
I have to tell you, going and seeing you at your show, being able to sit out there and really take it in, just the connection that you make with the crowd is unbelievable. I mean, there's just still that magic and that chemistry there.
And you know what? That's so important to me. I'd rather be a great personality than a singer. You know, I think there are a lot of guys who sing better than me, but they don't talk to the audience. You know, I did a thing called Glastonbury. It's a rock and roll festival in England. 130,000 people. The average age was like 20. My opening line was, "What's wrong with this picture? Glastonbury, Kenny Rogers." But they knew every song. I mean, I was so shocked. And the reason it was so fun to me is that I had gone to see the day before on our same stage were the Rolling Stones. I'd never seen the Rolling Stones. And I went to see them. And Mick Jagger, he's got to be 100, 101 years old.
He probably.
And the guy dances around on stage like he's 15. Boy, that was really discouraging.
I know. Well, you know, and Keith Richards, bless his heart, how old is he? But he gets his blood changed out every year. That's a rumor that I heard.
I'm going to try that next. That's my next move.
Oh, my God.
Show me a bar with a good-looking woman.
Let's talk about The Gambler. This was such a huge, iconic thing. Not only the song, but the movie and everything that came along with it. It made you a huge icon.
We did 5 movies. You know, I've always said I'm never a good actor. I'm good at being me in different clothes.
What was the first acting role that you had?
I think it would have probably been The Gambler.
Was it really?
You know, I did, like I said, 5 of those. And then I did another thing where I was a detective. And I've done a bunch of things since then. And I've always just been me in different clothes. I wear Western clothes or I wear a suit, but I'm still me. I can't act. Actors, you can give unbelievable dialogue and they make it believable. Me, you give believable dialogue. I can keep it believable.
Did you know what that song was going to be when you heard it for the first time?
No, I did. I liked it for the very reason that it was a story song. See, I've always thought the best country music, they put you in a place and then they tell you where you're going. You know, on a train bound for nowhere, in a bar in Toledo. You know, so those are great country songs. And I loved the fact that it was about this guy who met a stranger on the train. And I just loved it. And I love the statement, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
I've always wanted to ask this. Were you involved in the storytelling of the screenplay, the movie script? Were you involved in that at any level? Did you write it?
And I didn't write it, but, you know, the director was a good buddy of mine.
Yeah.
And one day they had us laying out in the desert with me and Travis Tritt, I think. And our arms were spread out and our legs were spread eagle and we were tied down to the ground. I said, well, now, how are we supposed to get out of here? And they said, we hadn't thought of that yet. So I said, well, now, you need to kind of give us a little gun and let me shoot. So they put a gun up my sleeve and I shot myself out. But it was great fun because they were designed not to be dramatic masterpieces, but to be a fun look at the Western life. And we got that. We had that.
I know as a child how much of an impact they had on me, so I enjoyed them a lot. I thought you were a great actor, personally.
Well, see, yeah, there you go.
I thought you should have gotten an Academy Award.
So do I. Now, mean, now that I look back on it, I think I should.
Well, you say we play that. Here's Kenny Rogers and the Gambler.
On a warm summer's evening.
Tracy Lawrence here, Honky Tonk. Friend Kenny Rogers.
Kenny Rogers here.
Kenny Rogers, the one and only.
No, there's two of us.
You have had the one that stays at home, the one that goes out and works.
No, there's a baseball player named Kenny Rogers.
Is there really?
And I kept telling him, don't you get me in trouble, pal. You know, went to see
those athletes.
Now. And he played for Atlanta for a while, too, but it was really weird.
Are you a big sports fan?
More so used to be, you know, because I knew all the guys.
Yeah.
But now I enjoy watching people I know do things. I don't necessarily enjoy watching people I don't know. I don't know why. I guess I'm self-centered.
Well, sports has changed a lot. It's gotten really difficult to root for a team.
Yeah.
In this age of free, whatever these guys are that go around to different teams, you know, you get attached to one and then they move to another team. It's really hard.
My boys, bless their heart, they love the Atlanta Braves. They don't care. They could lose every game, every season, and they still yell, "Go Braves, go Braves!" And they do the tomahawk chop.
It's, you know, Chipper Jones, guys. I mean, they're all the guys, the names that we used to know from the 80s and 90s are all gone.
Well, you know what's funny is that my wife is an identical twin, and her husband's name is Vince Kenny. So they go to the ball game one day, and his wife had on a Braves jacket that said Kenny, and my wife had on one that said Rogers, and they sat next together, and it looked like I was advertising. I said, oh, please move. Move out of this.
Oh, my goodness. What year did She Believes in Me come out?
You got to ask me that. I don't know what year The Gambler came out.
I thought that was one of my favorites because as a child that was growing up, dreaming about being in the music business, I love the heartache songs. I love the real cut you down deep. And that song always moved me because, you know, it's all about somebody standing beside you as you're going through the trials and tribulations of this business. I love the message of that song.
Well, you know, I always tried to do two types of songs. One were the country story songs that had social significance. The other were ballads that every man would like to say and every woman would like to hear. If you look at Lady Through the Years, She Believes in Me, You Get Rid of Me. They all fall into that category. And so I just felt like I couldn't go wrong with it.
Here's Kenny Rogers, She Believes in Me.
While she lay sleeping.
I've got kids now. I've got two daughters, 12 and 14, and I know you've got – your boys are twins, right?
Yeah, identical twins.
How old are they now?
I can't tell them apart. Yeah. They love that.
Oh, I'll
they're be, 11 I'll... and they're your size. I mean, they are the biggest kids you've ever seen in your life.
And spoiled rotten probably,
yeah,
like mine.
I think that's close. Yeah.
You know, they ever embarrass you?
Well, several times. Wanda's mom and dad are real churchgoers. They go – like my mom used to take me 3 times a week. Well, they go 3 times a week. They live in Valdosta. And they go to this little church, and they asked the boys one time, said, aren't you the Rogers boys? And they said, yes, ma'am. You want to come up and sing something for us? And they said, yeah. So they get up on stage, and they get their microphones, and they start singing, Show Me a Bar with a Good-Looking Woman. And I said, I'm not sure. You might want to learn Jesus Loves Me if you're going to go back up there. They had no clue.
Oh, my goodness. And I love having kids. I love being a parent. I think it's probably the most rewarding thing of everything that I've done in my life.
You know, when Wanda and I got married, and we've been married 22 years now, and when the boys were born, I did a little thing for them when we had them christened.
Yes.
And I said that children give a marriage purpose. Marriage gives a life purpose. You know, without children, your marriage, you're going through life, you know. But you have to have a purpose in your life. You really need 3 things to be happy. Someone to love, something to do, and something to look forward to. And if you have those 3 things, you can be happy.
Do you think your purpose has changed over the years from when you very first got into music? Don't you think things have evolved?
Yeah, it has changed. You know, I have 2 older kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one of the mistakes I made is I was gone a lot. And I didn't spend – I think I wrote in my book that there's a fine line – between being driven and being selfish. And I think I crossed that line when I was younger. But I don't know where I would be today had I not done that. So I can't say I'm sorry I did that. I'm sorry I hurt people in the way, in the process of doing that. But you know, my mom told me, she said, son, be happy where you are. never be content to be there. But if you're not happy where you are, you'll never be happy. So at the peaks and careers and valleys of my life, even in the valleys, I was still happy because I said, hey, I'm still making music, you know.
Sounds like your mother was a very wise woman.
She had a third grade education and she had a phenomenal understanding of what life was all about.
All my life was a paper.
What's the coolest person you've ever met of all the people, the travels and things that you've done? Anybody that sticks in your mind? I mean, maybe a president, or is there anybody that really impressed you as a human being?
Ray Charles. He was my inspiration. I went to see him when I was about 11 years old, and I kept looking at him and saying, man, everybody laughs at everything he says. They clap for everything he's saying. That's what I want to do. I didn't even know I could sing at the time, you know, but I knew that I loved the idea of, like you say, connecting with the audience and having them enjoy me, having them enjoy my thought process. And I got my sense of humor from my father and my sense of values from my mother.
Wow.
It's a great combination.
Where did Coward of the County come from?
I don't know. It was one of those songs. Larry Butler brought me that. And we did a movie on that, and I played a preacher. And they didn't have a, you know, it's like we kind of threw everything together. I had to write my own sermon. You should have seen that mess. But it was really interesting. I don't remember what I said, but when I saw it back, I thought, I like that. I like what it says. And, you know, and it was, you know, that story is about a rape. So how do you deal with that? But I learned a long time ago, if you do songs about sensitive subjects, make sure they're fast. Because people get caught up in the rhythm and they don't, and they go, well, that's about a rape. By that time, they like the song.
Let's go back. Here's Kenny Rogers, Coward of the County.
Coward of the County.
Everyone considered him the coward of the county.
Enjoying our time together today.
I'm having a great time. You know, it's nice to talk to somebody that understands the business.
You know, I have a lot of respect for you because you've been able to go through so many different facets of the business. You know, looking back and knowing you had a successful rock and roll career, how hard is that to change midstream? Was that a difficult decision for you to make?
Well, if you think back about the first edition, Just Dropped In was probably the only rock and roll song we did.
Yeah.
If you think back about Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town was first edition. Reuben James was first edition.
Really?
We had another song called Tell It All Brother that was in the 50s. In that 60s, in that era where everybody's got to stand up for what you believe. We were really a country-based song. Mickey Newberry wrote Just Dropped In.
Yeah.
And he went to high school with me.
Wow.
I mean, we were buddies, and he played me that song when I was with the Christy Minstrels, and I said, I can't do that with the Christies. So when the Christies, he said, well, it's just as well I have it on hold with Sammy Davis Jr. I said, oh, I need to hear that.
Wow.
So then when I went to the first edition, he played it again. I said, I can do it with them.
So it really wasn't that big of a transition as one might think going. I mean, because, you know, like Conway Twitty made a huge leap when he changed over to the country format.
Yeah, it wasn't a big leap for me when you think about the songs I'd done before.
Yeah.
And really, you know, country was my base. My mom, I used to leave to go to school. She'd be ironing our clothes. She'd have a big pitcher of iced tea on the end of the ironing board listening to Hank Williams. And I miss that heart just like you do.
I do.
From country music. However, you know, I had a talk to the Country Music Association one day. And they were complaining about things. And I said, look, you need to make a choice. And it's your choice. If this is an art form, get rid of everybody that doesn't sound like Hank Williams. If it's a business, take your money and be quiet. So
wow.
That's a choice that they have to make. You know, sooner or later, somebody like Randy Travis is going to come back with that honesty and have the right song to do it with.
I've always felt like songs have a magical way of finding the right artist at the right time. They might lay around for a long time.
No question.
Buy Me a Rose. Buy Me a Rose it was not a brand new song hot off the presses when you found it, was it?
I don't really know. It was written by two kids or two guys. They wrote this song and they sent it to me, and it fell into that category of what every man would like to say.
Would you have done that song in the 80s?
I don't know.
Sometimes they just don't fit at a certain place
right.
in life.
I was fortunate enough to have Alison Krauss and Billy Dean sing background on it, which really made a huge difference for that song.
Let's go all the way back to the late 90s. Here's Kenny Rogers, Buy Me a Rose.
He works hard to give her all.
Music has changed a lot over the years, but we were talking just off the air for a minute about how that right song and that right artist will come at the right time and set country music right back on its ear.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there's only two ways you can compete. You can go out and do what everybody else is doing and do it better. And I certainly don't like my chances of that. Or you can go out and do something nobody else is doing and you don't invite comparison. But you have to have that magical song.
Do you think the spot that we're at right now, it's going to be something traditional that brings that back?
I do. I think somebody's going to come along with a kind of a Randy Travis voice and be simple and just say the right words and kind of get everybody. I think it's hard to say this, but, you know, the audience is so young now, and it's all about being in your pickup truck and getting drunk and going out to. And I don't, that's not bad. That's just where
it's
it is.
It's just that party music and all the guys are playing in big arenas and it's a different vibe. But there's a lot of young kids that listen there because of the internet and being able to go back and find that stuff that are really getting into more traditional music now.
Yeah. Well, I think that, again, whoever does it is going to do it because it's different and it's going to stand out because it's not like anything else that's out there. I'm not bashing what's out there. I think they've done a great job of pulling new people into country music. But a lot of those people have never heard the real heart of country music. And I think that's what country music is about.
I agree. I definitely think so. You know, the days when guys were riding around station wagons with upright basses strapped onto the top of their guitar.
Oh, I know.
I didn't get that era. I came along when we were getting on nice buses and everything.
Yeah.
So I never, but you know, I think I still would have loved it. I would have loved the camaraderie of being with the guys in the band and going around conquering the world. There had to be something really cool about that.
The first edition, we used to travel in a station wagon and we put dual showmans on top of the station wagon. We would fly into a city and rent a station wagon, and Mickey Jones and I would drive down the street, and one blew off one night because we didn't have enough sense to strap it down. We thought, well, hell, it was so heavy for us to put up here, but it blew off and scraped it all up, but it worked.
Reuben James.
I loved you then, and I love you now.
You told me something when we visited a few years ago about how important that you felt it was to reinvent yourself from time to time, to push the envelope, because I was going through a period where I was getting ready to put a new album out, and I'd cut everything on it thus far that I'd written. I was about half done with it, and you really challenged me to advance myself forward and push myself to test my boundaries a little bit.
Yeah, you have to do that. You have to, every now and then, you have to, you know, and sometimes you don't even know you're capable of doing it, but you find a song that touches you. And you find a way to make that song touch other people. You know, that's why I've said in duets, you never start with a partner. You start with a song. And you say, who could sing this well? Because you're not being fair to the other person if you just say, hey, I want to sing with you.
Was it a constant thought at that particular place in life where you'd said, I want to do some male-female duets? It's something that I haven't done. I want to experience this works.
You know how that happened is Larry Butler produced me, and he produced Dottie West. And I go in the studio one night, and I get there an hour early, and she's running late, and she's singing Every Time Two Fools Collide. And I'd never met her. And she's looking through the window, and she said, Larry, is that Kenny Rogers? He said, yeah, it is. I said, come on out here. I'll introduce you. And she came out, and she said, I want to sing with you someday. And I said, I've been here long enough. I think I can sing this song. So I went out, and I sang to her track that night, and it was magical. You know, and it was the first time, you know, I came up in groups. I love harmony. I never wanted to be a solo singer. So for me to be able to do something with harmony was magical for me. And, of course, she's a very special lady.
I never got a chance to meet her.
Oh, you missed it.
Rest her soul, she passed away. But I've never heard anybody say a bad word about her. I mean, just the class of the lady that she was.
We traveled together for about a year and a half, 2 years. And every night when we'd come back to Nashville, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, there were 30 of us on the road. She would get in her kitchen and make breakfast for everybody in that group. And that was just Dottie. She loved that. She was just a special, special person.
Let's go back. I'm excited about hearing this. Here's Kenny Rogers. Not who is.
You want things.
Keith Whitley, Stranger to the Rain. Tracy Lawrence, we're honky-talking here with Mr. Kenny Rogers.
What a great voice.
I was such a big fan. You know, we were talking, there was just a couple of folks that I didn't get to meet. I came just a little bit late. One was Dottie West. The other one was Keith Whitley. I got to know Lori, you know, well over the years, but I never got a chance to meet Keith, and I was such a huge fan.
And everybody was. I mean, he was one of those genuine people. He did a couple of shows with me on my Christmas tour at the time, and he sang a song called There's a New Kid in Town, And I remember, you know, I had to go on later, so I was standing off just listening. And I thought, whoa, this kid has got something really special. And I regret that he didn't have a chance to really blossom properly.
I think he was right there poised on the verge of being the next super megastar. He was right
so
there
do I.
At it. He was
and,
really.
And he had the talent and the charisma to do it.
Yeah. It's just so sad that the demon got him, and it took him away from us way too quick.
You know, I think that's what happens when you get on the road. You get out and you do your show, and you rush. You have this huge rush that lasts an hour and 20, hour and 30 minutes. And you have 22 and a half or 23 hours to fill, and guys that don't have anything else to fill it. I did photography, and I played tennis, and I did a lot of things to fill those hours. They end up in drugs because that's the only way they can find that rush that they have while they're on stage.
How long have you known Ronnie Millsap?
I think that he opened for me for a while. Oh, it was strange. I was working the big venues, and we had our stage in the middle of the room, and it was only 6 feet wide, and it was a circle, and the band was in the pit. Ronnie Millsap comes out to work with us, and I didn't know how he was going to do it. He got on stage, and I swear to God, he ran around that stage. Scared me to death.
I've heard that he would actually come out and sound check and mark off how many paces it is to the edge of the steps.
Well, he put sandpaper along the edges, on both edges.
Really?
And he could tell what he was getting.
Had to be a trick.
Oh, he was running. I mean, I couldn't do that then, and I certainly can't do it now. But he, what a talent. What a talent.
I've always been a big fan of Ronnie Millsap.
You know, I think he was influenced a lot like I was by Ray Charles. I believe that. With all my heart.
You know, you can probably really hear a lot of that in his music. I mean, it's almost undeniable.
I asked Ray Charles once, I said, Ray, how do you know when to sing those soulful licks? He said, Kenny, if you got to ask, they're wrong. And I mean, it spoke volumes, you know. And so when Ronnie and I started working together, Kim Carnes wrote this song. And she had been with me in the New Christy Minstrels. She wrote this song for me and Ronnie. It's hard to find songs that two guys can sing without starting rumors, you know.
Let's see if we can hear a soulful side of Kenny Rogers. Here's Kenny, Ronnie Millsap. Make no mistake, she's mine.
Don't call her up anymore.
And, you know, I have to tell you a funny story. I have 3 Grammys. I thought I had 4. So I called the Grammy. I moved from one house to another. And I called and I said, you know, I seem to have lost the 4th Grammy. And is there any way you can replace the house? I'd be happy to pay for it. And they said, well, what was the song? And I said, it was Islands in the Stream with Dolly Parton. So she came back a little later. She said, you didn't get a Grammy for that. And I said, oh, okay, then disregard this call.
You know, we mentioned Islands in the Stream in our last break. So you said you had a great story about that.
Well, you know, first of all, you talked about stepping out of the box.
Yes.
I'd been doing, Larry Butler had produced me and produced most of the big hits I had. And I thought I would try something different. You know, Ray Charles sang country songs and he sang them very soulful. I thought, well, what if I sing soul songs and I do them country? So I called Lionel Richie and I said, Lionel, would you write me a song? He said, Kenny, I don't think I have time. I said, well, it's going to be on a greatest hits album and you'll probably sell 5 or 6 million. He said, how's Thursday night at 7:30? I swear to God, that was his answer. So Barry Gibb, after I did Lady with Lionel, Barry Gibb came to me and said, I'd like to do some stuff with you. And he brought me Islands in the Stream, and I just loved it. You know, everything's on the upbeat with the Bee Gees. That's why it sounds so exciting. So I go to L.A. I had a studio at the time in L.A., and I'm singing it. And I finally just said, Barry, I've been doing this for 4 days. I don't even like this song anymore. And he said, it was like an epiphany. He says, we need Dolly Parton. And I didn't really know Dolly. I'd met her before. And Ken Cragen, who was my manager at the time, said, I just saw her downstairs. And I said, well, go get her. So he went downstairs, and she marched in the studio like Dolly does. And that song was never the same.
Wow. Day. Talk about the right artist at the right time.
Oh, unbelievable. And him mentioning her and her being there, you know. And she walked in the studio, and once she started singing, you know, I fell in love with the song again because she added that energy that song needed.
Let's go back and hear it. Here's Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton. Islands in the Stream.
I didn't get a Grammy for this.
That was an amazing job with Dolly.
And it started a friendship that's been there for 30 years.
Y'all did a lot of tours together over the years, didn't you?
We did. We have done that several. She's too big for me now.
She's made movies and all that stuff. I hear she's still a sweetheart, though.
Oh, she's wonderful. You know, and I told someone the other day, the thing that makes her so special is you always know where you're at with Dolly. She doesn't mix things. You know, if she goes in her mind, it comes out her mouth. And she told me one day, she said, you know, Kenny, I could never sing at your funeral. And I said, well, the assumption is I'm going first. Is that what you're And I said, I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to be buried with my eyes open, so I'll know you damn well better at least show up, you know. But that is so Dolly, you know. She's wonderful, and that's what makes her so special.
Man, I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been actually getting set to sit and visit with you and hear all the old stories and just to
get to know you. We have to do this every year. I have some more stories, and we'll do it next year.
I appreciate that. Such a pleasure being able to sit and visit with Mr. Kenny Rogers. Hope you all had a good time.
Honky tonk.
Till next time, y'all keep it between the ditches. Tracy Long.
So let's go honky tonking. Need our lights. Fill that tip jar up and we'll play all night. Let's go honky tonking, honky tonking. Yeah, we'll go honky tonking.
Thanks for being a part of the show. You can always reach Tracy on Twitter at Tracy_Lawrence and at Facebook.com/TheRealTracyLawrence.